Welcome to The Mentor Files. I'm your host, Monica Royer, founder of Monica and Andy. If I've learned anything about running a business, it's that I've got so much left to learn. Join me as I chat with some of the world's most inspiring CEOs, passionate entrepreneurs, and experts at the top of their field to bring you invaluable insider advice and candid conversation about their journey to success. Here we go. Founded in 2015, The Daily Harvest is a direct-to-consumer brand blending health and innovation to provide delicious superfoods straight to your freezer. The founder and CEO, Rachel Drury, started the business as a solution to her own daily challenge, squeezing in healthy and nutritious meals into her busy life. She's gone from hand-delivering homemade smoothies from her car in the early days to running one of the fastest-growing nutritional food brands in the U.S. The Daily Harvest now has more than 100,000 subscribers, delivering breakfast bowls, ice cream sundaes, and soups to freezers across the country. Today, I chat with Rachel Drury about the importance of having a customer-centric business, how she attracted such high-profile investors early on, and how she has big plans to completely reshape the way people think about freezing. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Today, I am so excited to welcome Rachel Drury, the founder and CEO of Daily Harvest. Rachel, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Rachel, for people that have been living under a rock, which I feel like is where you would need to be if you haven't heard of the Daily Harvest yet, I feel like congratulations. It is literally everywhere. Tell us a bit about the brand.
Okay, so Daily Harvest basically started because I was hangry. I was going to work, like, you know, realizing that it was 3 o'clock and I hadn't eaten yet. And I was like, all right, for the sake of everybody else around me, I need to eat something. But then I was grabbing things like bars and trail mix. Like, oh, this, I'm not eating food. Like, there has to be a better way. So I started meal prepping. And that was really the beginning of the brand. It's the idea is like, you know, it's great if you have the time to meal prep, but you know, I was doing it and I hated every minute of it. I was like, why isn't somebody doing this for me? And then I was like, wait a minute, I can do this. You know, it was really about like that idea that we all want to eat better. We all have more information about health and wellness than we've ever had before in our lives. And we're also busier and, you know, multitasking at a greater rate than ever before. And that causes what I like to call this modern eating dilemma, where it's like, you know, you just need superfood super fast. And that's what we provide.
I love that. And tell me a little bit, you founded the brand in 2015. Obviously, whether you're producing clothing or food, I mean, nothing launches overnight. So from the time that you said, yeah, hey, I don't want to have a snack of trail mix anymore. I want to be having like smoothies and, you know, this better for me food. How long did it take to develop the actual food until you could bring it to fruition?
So I'm pretty like quick and efficient, just like as a human. so it took me about 2 weeks to build a site and come out with our first recipes. And that, like the ability to launch quickly and kind of iterate throughout the journey is very deep in our DNA. So, you know, I launched really quickly. It was a proof of concept. And I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to, instead of asking people what they think they want, because ultimately, like, people don't really know until they taste something and they put their money where their mouth is. You know, I'm going to put something out there and let's see how people respond. Let me get feedback. Let me talk to customers and see what happens. And you know, that's exactly how it started. And it's still how we operate today.
And tell me a little bit about your background previous to the Daily Harvest. Was there things in there that screamed you were going to be like a smoothie entrepreneur, or was this like a brand new field for you?
Yeah. Well, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I have, my mother's an entrepreneur. My father's an entrepreneur. I have a sister who's an entrepreneur. It's just kind of like, you know, even growing up, it was like, there's a problem, go solve it, like figure it out. And it's become like so much a part of who I am. And, you know, I have a passion for that. Like, you know, there's a problem, go fix it. So, you know, I always knew that it was what I wanted, but you know, when I was building my career, you obviously don't just like wake up and you're like, okay, I'm going to push the entrepreneur button. And like, it's going to happen today. So kind of thinking about what skills I wanted to be able to have full confidence in my ability to go it on my own. I kind of started my journey in marketing and branding. I was like, I want to work for who I think the best, like, what is the best brand? And I, at the time, thought Four Seasons Hotels and Resorts, which is still a strong brand. But at the time, I was graduating college and I was like, great. You know, I feel like what's so unique about them is they're so customer centric. And it's not just like bells and whistles and some clever visuals. It's like really deep in their brand. And I thought that was an incredible thing to learn. So I spent a few years there, then went off to business school. And after business school, I got back into the corporate world and I worked at Amex for basically the same reasons. I wanted to work at a really big behemoth type company and really kind of understand how to steer a ship of that size. Worked there for 2 years in marketing as well. And then moved over to Gilt Group. I was on the Jet Setter team. I was again in marketing, but I had the opportunity to really have that entrepreneurial experience where, you know, if I was able to follow the passions that I had and, you know, able to try things out and, went from sales to marketing to business development. Like at the end of my time there, I kind of touched everything. And that was when I felt like, you know, I was finally ready. And, you know, I had the idea because that's a big piece of it.
And when you launched, I feel like that's a very exciting route to get to what you're doing. And I think obviously, as I talk to more and more founders of companies, it's exciting to see how many people were involved in marketing and branding. And I feel like sometimes that background is like one of the best launching pads because you just have such a good idea of what brand is like before you build your own. Right. It wasn't my background, so I certainly can't commend myself in that area. But I definitely feel like as I'm talking to successful CEOs on the phone, a lot of people come from that background. So I feel like there's just like, if you have an entrepreneurial spirit and you really get a chance to dig in at someone else's brand, it seems like a great jumping off point for your own.
It gives you a really good high level view of all of the components that go into building something.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of what my husband launched his own business. It's like a customizable furniture company called Interior Define, and he had like a similar background. And I'm always in awe of, I feel like he's always like a couple steps ahead of me. I learned so much from him. And I think a lot of that is because he did have such a strong marketing and branding background to begin with. So I think that it does give people like an edge and an advantage. And obviously like so much other hard work and things factor into a successful brand at the end of the day. But it seems like you were off to such a great start with your background. And then like a 2 week like ideation to launch is like crazy amazing. What did that launch look like? I think I read somewhere that you were like making smoothies and delivering them from a car, or the organization has become much more sophisticated since then. But what was the first sales? What did they look like compared to like what the offerings that you obviously have, which are very robust now?
Yeah. So that goes back to that proof of concept that I kind of had up and running in 2 weeks. And I built out a really rudimentary website. I put together smoothies that I enjoyed every day. And, you know, knowing that the ultimate goal was not to be a smoothie business, but was to really kind of reimagine the entire frozen food aisle to solve this modern eating dilemma. And I can go on and on about why frozen, why direct to consumer, but without getting off topic, you know, it was really like, you know, how do you bring this thing to life in the most efficient way possible and then go from there. So started with things that I knew I liked, invited friends over, got them to taste test, did, you know, a bunch of really like, I'd say easy, scrappy, focus group type things, send out some surveys and just got started. And for me, it was really like, if there was product market fit, the branding and all of the like nice to haves wouldn't need to be that great. I would start to see some sort of traction. So what I did is I set a metric for myself. And, you know, the way that it's still very much how I conduct business today is I like to think of everything as a series of little experiments. This was a little experiment. You know, the stakes weren't too high. It was like, let me put it out there and see what happens. And with an experiment, you know, it's science. Like you have to set, you know, what does success look like? What does failure look like? So I said, you know, in a period of 8 weeks, if I can get 5 times more people to purchase that I don't know, like email addresses that I've never seen, I have no like clue who these people are, then those who I do, then this was something and it was time to like quit my job and dive in head first.
And tell me at what point you brought on, like, I know you've got investors, you've got some celebrity investors, like major venture capital. What point did you say, hey, you know, I've got a business that I think other people are going to want to invest in?
So for me, I didn't want that in the beginning. I really wanted to bootstrap and get the business as far along as possible on my own before I went in that direction. And that is exactly what I did. So, you know, I was probably a little bit different than most out there where, you know, I really kind of wanted to see how far I could go without it. But once I decided, I kind of reverse engineered. So I spoke to a ton of people and determined what numbers I would need to have from, you know, an ROI perspective, from a sales perspective, to be able to get to build the kind of rate of round of fundraising that I wanted. And that's how I did it. So I you know, I kind of backed into it, and I've done that with every one of the rounds, kind of saying, okay, what do all these numbers need to be to be successful in this raise? And you know, that's the point where you go out and do it.
I love that. And let's have that discussion for a minute. For people that are listening, I know there's always a debate, you know, where, you know, there's people that feel really strongly like I bootstrapped this and I did this on my own. And then there's other people that are like, oh, there's such a benefit to having investors. And it sounds like you had a bit of a mix of both where you launched it yourself and then after some time took on investors. From your perspective, what, for people that are listening, what do you think is the real benefit of having major investors, venture capital? Like how much farther do you think that's brought the brand than if you had continued to bootstrap it?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, you can do so much more, so much faster when you have a lot of money behind you. Like there's no discounting that.
Right.
It is real, but you know, I was also from some of my past experiences, I've heard a lot of negatives about working with VCs and how, you know, the vision gets muted and there's all these like challenges and, you know, the politics of it and the board meetings and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I don't want to. But when I realized that I was choking off growth for something that, you know, had real legs, I was like, all right, you know what? This is going to be about the type of partners that I find. So I did my homework and I met a lot of people and I shook a lot of hands. And I had so many meetings. It's like dizzying. But for me, it allowed me to only really go out to those who I knew I wanted to partner with. So, you know, when I had those partners who were value aligned, who I liked, because that's a major part of it, what I was able to do is to, you know, I trusted them. I was able to like, you know, open up a little to them and share with them like what some of the challenges are. I think with some more dysfunctional boards and fundraising relationships, what can happen is like people start to hide things and like that's just not healthy. So if you really find a board that you know you can be truly open with, and you know, fundraising and boards, I'm lumping it all together, but it really is so related.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much that it does for you. It's not only the funding, it's not only like, you know, the wind beneath sails, but it's also, you know, they're cheerleaders. They have resources. They can make connections. You know, they've seen a lot. So like, you know, as a first time founder, there's a lot of things that you can make mistakes with, that you can make mistakes on. And if you have investors who have already seen these mistakes made, they can save you from yourself.
I think that's so true. I think that's so true. And that's so similar to my experience. And I know to your point, that isn't everybody's experience. And a lot of times I do hear negativity around, you know, and understandably so, people want to keep the company to themselves. Like, you know, they want, you know, they fear answering to people. And I think to your point, it sounds like we've had a really similar experience where if you get the right board, they help you, as Bobby on my board, Yazdani always tells me, you know, to see around the corner a bit. And to, and, you know, they've been there and done that. And so the money has to come with like expertise and the money. At the end of the day, it's great. Money is money. But without the strategy behind the capital, sometimes that capital can fall flat. And it seems like you've been fortunate to find not only like the right dollars to move it forward, but the right mentors and the right board. And I agree with you. If you feel like you're working for your board, and I think my brother always says this, if you don't listen to your board, you might get fired. And if you do listen to your board, you will get fired. So it's like the opportunity to have a board that allows you to make your own decisions so that they're there as mentors to tell you like, here's what we think, here's what might happen. But as a CEO, the ultimate decisions need to lie with you. And I think that if you go into the relationships knowing that you are going to run the show and also run the responsibility, because with that, as you and I both know, you know, there's great responsibility that comes with taking on other people's capital and, you know, being the steward of that capital. But the relationship doesn't need to be one of like a complete reporting structure where you're doing everything that your board is telling you to do. Because for the most part, you know, every great board member has a million other things to do rather than, you know, spend all their time thinking about what you're doing. So, you know, you're the expert. Is there a particular person, Rachel, like a particular board member or a mentor or two that you would say, like, you couldn't have done this without?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. At different phases in the company, I feel like there are different people. So early on, one of our early investors, Andrew Black, he was an incredible mentor to me. You know, as a single founder, sometimes it can get like, you know, it can get a little lonely. There's lots of ups and downs. I'm sure you felt the same thing. You know, nobody has that smooth upward to the right trajectory. Like it's just doesn't happen like that. So he was always so great with like pulling me out of my own head and, you know, helping me face some of the challenges. He was an operator, like CEO of multiple huge companies that you've definitely heard of before. And he was always just so helpful from that perspective to me. You know, and now I have two great investors. One is on Alex Kautzig is at Lightspeed, and he's on the like more on the technology, commerce, consumer side. And then on the other side, I have Carl Stenmark from BMG, who is like deep in CPG and food, and putting them together is like one of the best things I've done. People, you know, when we did it, we definitely turned heads. People were like, wait, these two have nothing in common. And I was like, that's kind of what I love about it. So they've just been incredible kind of, you know, taking these two very different perspectives and helping me kind of see through every decision from every angle, because there are those blind spots, right? And then, you know, I would also say Sally Roebling, who recently joined our board. You know, she's a seasoned executive in the world of CPG. She's also on the board of Plated. Like, she's just seen so much, and she's also such a polished leader that, you know, sometimes when, you know, as the first time I've done this, you know, as I'm kind of working through some of, you know, my own areas of opportunity, she's been a wonderful mirror for me.
I love that. And I think that's a good story in the way that it kind of shows you, it's never any one person necessarily that does everything from a mentorship perspective, but it's a mix of different people, and a mix of people with different strengths, I think, is really helpful as well. So as I look at even my own board, it's like, great, I've got my brother. Obviously, he's got a lot of e-commerce experience. And so I don't need a second person that understands e-commerce.
Right.
But having people that understand different things in different ways. And as you said, too, and I think that's really well stated, at different times,
right,
you know, there's just need for different types of expertise. And having a couple of those evergreen people that are able to see you through the whole process is so helpful as well. And speaking of that, I know you founded the brand in 2015. When do you feel like you really reached a tipping point? Because I feel like there's this idea that there's overnight success as people start seeing something like the Daily Harvest, and, you know, maybe they just saw it last week or the week before and suddenly it's everywhere.
Yeah.
People are like, oh my gosh, overnight, this just did it. And for the majority of people that I've interviewed on this podcast, it's like 3 years for almost everybody before things explode. So what was that like for you?
So we launched nationally about 2 years ago. And I would say for us, it was right around our Series A. So, oh my gosh, when was that? It was the day after I had my son, so I should know this. Okay, so he's 1.5. So I guess about 1.5 years ago is when we like really started hitting that inflection point.
And do you feel like any of the celebrity investors you've had, has that helped from like a share of voice or like a viral standpoint to get the brand out farther?
You know, I would say it's just a bunch of things working, like, you know, the idea of potentiation taking place where, you know, you start out, you get the wonderful word of mouth, and then you get some influencers starting to talk about you, and like all these things kind of start working together. You start getting PR and they potentiate and grow and, you know, ultimately, you know, create this this beast that kind of fuels itself. And it's been really exciting to watch. And I still pinch myself every day.
And tell me a little bit about the distribution of the brand. Like, now you've got a website, you know, people can come and tell us how it works. Cause I feel like it's a little bit different than like just setting up a retail storefront and selling this.
For sure. So it's pretty complex on the technical side. But the way that it works is you choose a box. You choose a 6, 9, 12, or 24 box. And then you can get it delivered at any cadence that you want. So you can say, I want this weekly, I want this twice, I want this every 2 weeks, I want this once a month. And the idea is that there's like a sliding scale in pricing, and it all kind of works as you know, some people have bigger freezers and some people have smaller freezers. And that's ultimately like how people decide usually.
Sure.
And what happens is you get this box and you fill it with anything that you want. So we actually just launched our cold soup today. So you should check them out. But, you know, you can take things like cold soup and add them to your box. You can take smoothies, you can take overnight oats, you can take our harvest bowls, and you can really pick and choose for every single delivery.
Amazing. And from a geography perspective, for people that are listening, what geography do you guys cover?
We cover the entire US or continental US.
Amazing. And when you launched, tell me about how long it took to be able to do that. Was that time consuming to expand that much?
Absolutely. So we started in New York City. I think I mentioned I was, 9 months pregnant, delivering stuff in my car, making smoothies by hand, like doing the whole thing. And from there expanded to the entire East Coast. And then from the East Coast said, all right, West Coast is the obvious next choice. There's the most population density, you know, and then to Central. So we did it iteratively, and you know, it's a theme you've already heard. It's kind of repeated throughout the history of Daily Harvest, but it was slow and steady, and just thinking about the logistics and the logical thinking behind why, when, and where, ultimately we got it done, and it was really exciting when we did.
And do you ever see yourself doing any type of like physical, like restaurant type space, or do you think you'll stay with delivery because it's been so lucrative?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's because of how lucrative it is. It's really more about like what the customer needs and wants, right? So when you go to a grocery store and you buy something and you go into that grocery aisle, especially the freezer aisle in the grocery store, it's literally and figuratively a very cold place, right? Like, you're not encouraged at all by the shiny glass that's reflective that like fogs up as soon as you open it, and you're freezing cold. And like, you know, for all those reasons, when you open that door to like inspect what you're about to consume, you're like, all right, this isn't worth it. Like, I'm moving on to the next thing. Or you have the same old thing that like you just already know, and you grab the same thing over and over again. But for us, so much of what we do is about discovery, and the freezer aisle just isn't conducive to that. It's also, there's, we farm freeze every single thing that we put into our cups. And that's why they're so superior in nutrition. So like the stuff that you get in our cups is actually higher in nutrient content than any of the stuff that you get at say Whole Foods. And a lot of people don't know that, but that's one of the reasons why it's so important that we ship, because we're able to keep that cold chain intact. Where if you go to the grocery store and you buy one of our cups, and then you put it in your trunk and you drive home, by the time you get home, it's probably like a little melted. And, you know, that doesn't matter so much when it's frozen peas, but when it's something that, is organic and frozen within literally hours of being harvested and then has to go in your blender and you don't want it arriving in a big chunk, like, it's so important that it stays frozen. And that's really why we've kept it direct to consumer.
I love that.
Not only that, but we're also able to deliver it more inexpensively than we would if we were in stores.
No, I love that. And I feel like it's so good that you explain that too, because I feel like a lot of people probably don't realize that. I'm not a good cook or like a foodie or anything like that, but I'm vegan and I'm really focused on like nutrition. And, you know, I've got, obviously a growing daughter too. So I love hearing about all of that stuff too. And I feel like there's so much about nutrition that isn't out there that people don't always realize. So I think that's kind of an exciting component. And there's so much that people can learn from, you know, your brand and just like things that they can take, just tips for their everyday life too, in terms of understanding frozen food versus stuff that's fresh. So I like how you guys kind of on your website seem to educate as well, which I think is
yeah,
helpful.
For sure.
So tell me a little bit, Rachel, right now about, like, you know, obviously, like, growing brands, like, such a viral effect at the moment. What does your team look like?
So my team is about 50 people, and we are, I'd say, evenly distributed between, you know, our operations team. Our sourcing team is probably, we weigh pretty heavy on the sourcing side. And, you know, I'd say our technology team, marketing, finance, like, they're all kind of about the same size.
And how much do you feel like, obviously this is like a question where of course it's changed, but, what about your job now is completely different than when you started? Because I feel like the evolution of being a CEO at a startup is so different year to year that sometimes you get to points,
it's like crazy.
An inflection point where you're like, wait, what am I doing anymore? Like, this is what I was doing before. Now I've got a couple of people that are doing this. Like, how do I sort of reinvent my job? So
Right. Are
there a lot of things that you feel like you started doing that you're still doing, or are you just doing a completely different job at this point?
Yeah, so I am doing a completely different job, as you said, but there are also some things that, you know, that are still very much, you know, they're such a big part of the brand and so close to me and my heart and like the reasoning behind building this brand that I'm still involved in the everyday. And that's things like the recipe development. You know, nothing goes out the door unless I've tasted it like 15 times. You know, and I am very involved in our sourcing. Like we invest in transitional organic, and you know, there's just like a bunch of things like that that I'm still involved in. And I'd say the marketing and branding. You know, that's so much a part of, you know, me, and you know, it came from my heart and my soul. So I'm still very much, you know, a part of that. But you know, I used to do everything, and it's so nice to have people now who I can really you know, trust to take on major tasks, you know, like everything from finding office space to making sure we have enough capacity to meet demand.
Absolutely. You know, I agree. And it's fun to always take and be able to dabble in the things that make the brand, because I think as a founding CEO, Right. There's certain touch points that you always want to stay close to, or a certain connection with your customer that it's important to have your vision. But the more people that you can bring on, because the scale of what you're doing just gets so astronomical over time, like you can't possibly do everything. Nor in my case, I've realized that like other people are actually way better at stuff than I ever was. So it's really fun to bring people in and be like, oh, that's how you do that job, as opposed to the way that I was doing.
For sure. You're like, oh, there's actually like some methodology here.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I made it up. Totally, that I've been able to bring on people that are just much more talented than I am in many different
for
areas.
Sure.
And that's fun. But just being able to stay true to, you know, for me, like even with Instagram, like I feel like I still do that every day and like think about what we're going to put on or like interact with the customers on there. So I feel like there, and you know, that was just something I did and I certainly don't do everything that I did in the beginning or even close, but it is nice to stay close to certain touch points.
For sure.
Keep that constant. And finally, Rachel, and I don't talk about this with everyone, but both like founding CEOs with children. So tell me a little bit, like, do you feel like, and this, I guess, is just even for me personally, but do you feel like you have sanity in your life and your day at this point? Or what is it like?
Sanity? I don't even know what sanity is.
Exactly.
I live in the middle of a tornado.
That's how I feel
like,
too.
It's crazy. I feel like I come home at the end of the day. Actually, let me start in the morning. I wake up in the morning and I'm like, okay, be a parent. But you're like already half your brain is like at work and you're like, okay, what do my kids need today? And then by the time you like, you know, transition to the work environment and then you're on your way back home, you're like, so in that mindset and then you have to change that. And you're like, okay, so what did my kids eat today? Like, what are they eating food or did they not? Like, it's crazy.
It's crazy. And I feel like even recently, and I feel like I don't get to talk to that many people that do exactly what I'm doing, but in some ways, it's like, I want to give the job the credit and like the gratitude that I feel like it's due, because I can't imagine doing anything else. It's so fun and I feel so happy to be able to do what I really love. But on the flip side of that, I feel like sometimes as the founding CEO, the job drains the rest of your life away. And absolutely. It's really hard. Like sometimes I feel like a shell of a person as I'm like trying to socially talk to people, or like you said, that decompressing after work, especially when things are still going on, and it does rob you of some part of your life. It's like a conscious give and take.
Absolutely. And I, you know, when I am with my kids, I try so hard to think of like quality over quantity. But, you know, when you come home and you've had a draining day, it's so tough.
And it never ends. Like the text, the emails, like no matter how much you want it to, it's like somebody always urgently needs something. And it's always, you know, completely legitimate. I feel like if you have a good team, right. But it does kind of, I don't know. So I have no tips to give or anything. I don't think I'm really very successfully doing any of it. But it's good to just hear that other people feel the chaos as well. And I just try to.
Yeah, no, it is.
Grateful that I like have her and I love the job, but they definitely don't mesh a lot of the time.
Absolutely. The chaos is real. And now I'd say, you know, one business and two kids later, I'm like, you know, I kind of look back and people are like, well, would you have done it differently? And, you know, I wouldn't, because there's never a good time.
No.
There just isn't. So, you know, you kind of dive in head first and you look back and you're like, holy goodness, like how did all of this happen? But you know, you do the best you can, and I like to think that I'm a better mother because I'm doing what I'm passionate about. You know, and ultimately, like, I want my kids to be proud of their mother, and I want them to, you know, like, you know, them seeing me follow my passions, I think, like, you know, is what I want for them.
Absolutely. No, I feel like it's so inspiring to see other moms be able to do it. And, you know, we're fortunate to be doing what we're doing and all of that too. But I'm always inspired by other people that are, you know, doing the same thing and juggling all of it, because like my heart goes out to you too. I know how difficult it is, how fun it is, but how challenging those stressful moments can be. Rachel, thank you so much.
Hope you enjoyed the episode. For more information and tips from our guests, stop by monicaandandy.com or check us out on Instagram at monicaandandy. If there's someone you want to hear from or have any other suggestions, please leave us a comment on iTunes. Thank you for listening.